day by day, and I was ready to give them that time, however long it took. When I went into the valley and saw the dead, and then helped care for the hundreds who were injured, I thought about the devastation described in the holy text, and the handful of the remnant who had survived. We had almost been them. I kissed two fingers, one for the lost, and one for those to come, and prayed the winnowing was over. We could spare no more lives to the heavens.
"I'm done with this one," the surgeon said. She wiped the blood from her hands, and I followed the sentries as they carried Caden to the far end of the tent.
Caden.
I reached down, feeling for my leg. "Don't worry, it's still there." Pauline wiped my forehead with a damp cloth. My head still swam with the elixir the surgeon had given me. The tent was full of the injured. There were a dozen more tents like this one. I'd had to live with the wood in my leg for 3 days. There were too many wounded for the few surgeons here to take care of at once. I'd almost taken Orin up on his offer to cut it out for me. Tavish lay on a bedroll opposite mine, his arm and neck swathed in bandages. Half of his long ropes of hair were gone. He lifted his good arm as a welcome, but even that small effort left him grimacing with pain. Rafe sat on a crate in the opposite corner, while Birdie brushed a healing balm on his hands. Someone else dressed a gash on his shoulder, then put his arm in a sling. I could hear Gwyneth through the tent walls giving orders to Grizz for more pails of water and Orin tearing fabric for bandages. The aftermath was as loud as the battle, but with a different kind of noise. "The watch captain?" I asked. Pauline shook her head. "No sign," she answered. The coward had slithered away, and he and a half dozen of the council were unaccounted for. It could be they were among the mass of dead bodies. Not all were recognizable anymore. "If they're alive, they've crawled into deep, dark holes," Pauline added. "We'll never see them again." I nodded and hoped she was right.
Rafe.
"How are your hands?" "Birdie just changed the dressings," I answered. "I should be able to ride in a few days." "Good." "And how is your shoulder?" I asked. "Sore. But more than worth it. You may pull it out of joint any time you wish." I had barely reached Leah before she went over the bluff with the Komazar and Kalantha. My hands had still been wet with raw burned flesh, but I caught her wrist and pulled her back up. Even with our injuries, she and I were among the lucky ones. I'd told Caden about Andreas, but his body had never been found, perhaps trampled beyond recognition by a Brezalot. Dalbrek's toll was high. By General Draeger's count, we had lost 4,000 soldiers. Without Leah's plea and her promise to the Vendans, there would have been no end to it. There was no doubt in Draeger's mind now that the Komazar would have wiped Morrigan and then us from the face of the earth. Dalbrech, Vendan, and Morrigi's forces worked together during the aftermath, and Leah spoke to the Vendans daily, helping them prepare for their journey back home. "We should be ready to leave in a few days, too," she said. "The last of the bodies have been burned. There were too many to bury them all."
"Jeb?"
She nodded and walked away.
Leah.
It had been almost 2 weeks. The last of the dead were buried or burned, including the Komazar. It was strange, looking at his lifeless body, the fingers that had clutched my throat, the mouth that had always held threat, the man who had looked out on an army city and imagined the gods under his thumb. Everything about him now was so ordinary.
We can leave the dog for the animals, a sentry had told me. I imagined my expression must have suggested such a thought. I looked at Calantha lying beside him. No, I said. The Komazar is gone. He is only a boy named Reginaeus now. Burn his body alongside hers. Jeb received his own funeral pyre. I had found him alive the morning after the battle as we searched among the piles of bodies. I had pulled his head into my lap, and his eyes had opened. Your Highness, he said, his face dirty and bloody, but his eyes still shining with life. I'm here, Jeb, I said, wiping the blood from his brow. You'll be all right. He nodded, but we both knew it was a lie. His expression pinched with pain as he forced a smile to his face. Look at this. His gaze turned downward toward his bleeding chest. I've ruined another shirt. It's only a small tear, Jeb. I can fix that. Or I'll get you a new one. Crevasse linen, he said, his breath choppy. Yes, I know. I remember. I will always remember. His eyes glistened, lingering with a last knowing look. And then he was gone. I smoothed his hair. I whispered his name. I wiped his face. I rocked him. I held Jeb like he was everyone I'd watched die this past year, all those I hadn't had time to hold. I didn't want to let go of any more. And then I buried my face in his neck and sobbed. My fingers wove with his, and I remembered the first time I'd met him, a paddy clapper kneeling in my room saying he was there to take me home. A sentry brushed my arm, trying to convince me to let him go, but I pushed him away. For once, I wouldn't be rushed to say goodbye. It was the last time I'd cried, no matter how many more bodies we piled to burn or bury. The immensity of the death was numbing, but I knew at some point tears would come again. The pain would take hold of me unexpectedly and throw me to my knees. There were no rules to grief, but there were rules to life, and in those first few days, the requirements of the living demanded I keep going. There were others, Perry, Marquez, the field marshal, who hadn't made it either, others of the officers gravely injured, and still others who had fought just as valiantly and were unscathed. Governors Umbrose and Carswell were among the lone members of the council who had laid down their arms along with the clans. They had another kind of hope, too. General Draeger was one of the unscathed, and he helped me in the aftermath of battle, sometimes doing the hardest and most heart-wrenching of tasks. We both held down a young Venden as his mangled arm was cut free from the gears of one of the Komazar's ill-conceived weapons. I owe you an apology, he said one day as we walked back to camp. You're not what I expected. No apology necessary, I said. You're not what I expected either. I thought you'd be a power-mongering, insufferable ass. He sucked in a surprised breath. And now? Instead, I find a man who is passionate and deeply loyal to his kingdom. I admire that greatly, General, but it can be a narrow line to navigate. Sometimes it might lead us to cross boundaries. I know what it feels like to have my choices taken away. I pray no daughter of your kingdom will ever have to fight for her voice to be heard, as I have had to. He cleared his throat. Apparently my subtlety was lacking. That's why you ran from the marriage? He asked. Everyone deserves to be loved, General, and not because a piece of paper commands it. Choice is powerful, and can lead to great things if not held in the tight fists of a few. The food supplies the Komazar had stockpiled had mostly survived. They would be enough to get us back to Venda. I met with the clans and wept on their shoulders, and they on mine. Day by day, I felt our resolve growing, knitting together like a broken bone, our shared scar making us stronger. I rejected the title of Komazar, but accepted the one of Queen. And even though my strength and hope grew daily, when we met at the end of the valley to say goodbye to Muragiz and Dalbrecht's troops, I felt some small part of that hope wither. I hugged Tavish and Orin, then Caden and I shook hands with Generals Howland and Draeger. General Draeger hesitated, as if he wanted to say something else to me, but then he only squeezed my hand and wished me well again. Rafe stepped forward and clasped Caden's hand. They said nothing, instead studying each other, and then they exchanged nods, as if some words had passed between them. I stared at Rafe and filled my mind with 100 memories of what was, so I wouldn't have to think about what was to come. I thought about the first time he had scowled at me in Birdie's tavern, the sun slashing across his cheekbones when he came to Devil's Canyon, his fumbling over words when I asked where he was from, the small heart of sweat on his shirt as he swept webs from the eaves, the curious touch of his finger tracing the kava on my shoulder, the rage in our voices as we argued right before our first kiss, the tears in his eyes as he lifted me from an icy bank. But mostly I remembered our few stolen hours when kingdoms didn't exist for us. Leah. My memories tumbled away, and the sun was suddenly hot and blinding. Rafe walked over to me. Caden and the officers looked on. There was no privacy in this moment, and maybe it was for the best. "You need to return to your duties in Dalbrecht now," I said. It was a statement, but I know he heard my question laced through it. He nodded. "And you also have your duties in Venda." The same question was hidden in his words. I nodded. "I've made promises, just as you have."
"Yes, promises. I know."
He shifted on his feet, glancing down for a moment.
"We'll be drawing up the new treaties soon. We'll send them to you and the other kingdoms."
"Thank you. Without Dalbrecht's lead, we couldn't make this happen. I wish you well, King Jackson." He didn't call me Queen Jezalia, as if he still couldn't accept either the title or the choice I had made. He had never loved Venda the way I did. He stared at me for the longest time, saying nothing, then finally answered,
"I wish you well too, Leah."
We parted, he going his way and I going mine, both of us committed to help the kingdoms we loved build a future. There were many ways a life could be sacrificed, and it wasn't always through dying. I looked back over my shoulder, watching him ride away, and then I thought about Gwyneth's long-ago remark.
"Love. It's a nice little trick if you can find it."
We had found it. But now I knew finding love and holding on to it were not the same thing. I rode back to the multitudes of Vendans who waited for my signal, their faces filled with hope, ready to begin the future I had promised them. And I waved our caravan forward, in the direction of home.
With the dawn comes a better glimpse of our shelter. It is safe to build a fire now. The scavengers won't spot us. We are cold and hungry, and Pada has killed a rabbit. We gather what little fuel we see, a broken chair and a few books. The pages are precious dry tinder that will help the wood catch. The others walk around in wonderment, looking at the walls that enclose us. I watch the pages of the books curl, hear the sizzle of the rabbit, and the rumble of our stomachs. The child brings me a colorful sphere, most of it blue.
"What is this?"
she asks, and spins it, entranced with its beauty. I am uncertain myself what to call it, but the words written across it are familiar. I search my memories, my own grandmother telling me how the world used to be. It is a map of our world.
Our world is round?
It was. Now it is flat and small and brown. But the child already knows that. From the stars, Morrigan. If you fly among the stars, you will see the world far differently.
What will I see?
She is hungry. Not just for food, but for understanding, and I have little to give her. Come, child. Sit in my lap as the rabbit cooks, and I will tell you what you can see from the stars. Once upon a time, long, long ago, there were not just the remnant and the scavengers. There were nations of every kind, hundreds of kingdoms that circled this world.
Hundreds?
She smiles, believing it to be another of my tales. Maybe it is. The lines of truth and sustenance blurred long ago.
What happened to them, Amma? Where are they now?
They are us, child. We are what's left.
But there was a princess?
Yes, child. A princess.
Just like you.
A princess strong and brave who visited the stars, and from there she saw a different world and imagined new ones yet to be. The Last Testaments of Gudrell. Chapter 89, Rafe.
Your Majesty, where is your head? Sven whispered between clenched teeth. He knew where it was, the same place it had drifted to countless times these last months. But she had her duties, and I had mine. Yes, go on, Lord Gandry, I said, sitting a little straighter in my chair. I returned my attention to the barons of the assembly, where it belonged. Sven had taken to heart my last words to him back in Morrigan, words I thought he couldn't hear, and probably not the last words Gwyneth had in mind. Wake up, you old coot. You're not dismissed from your duties yet. Wake up, or I'm going to dump you in a water trough. Do you hear me, Sven? I still need you. Whenever we argued over some matter now, he reminded me of my confession, that I needed him. It was true, I did, and not just as an advisor. The Morrigies had kindly deposited him back on our doorstep as soon as he was able to travel. I kept his days short. He still tired easily, but it was a miracle he was alive at all. After the battle in Sentinel Valley, the long ride back to Dalbrek had given General Draeger and me plenty of opportunities to talk. He told me he was having second thoughts about the betrothal. His daughter was young and bright and creative, and the weight of such a contract might hamper her growth and dampen her spirit. She was only 14, after all. With the defeat of the Khomazar and my return to Dalbrek assured, the betrothal would prove a distraction to the work ahead of us, and the good of the kingdom was all that mattered, and would I find it mutually agreeable to dissolve the contract? I had mulled it over for about 5 seconds and agreed. When the assembly adjourned at last, I returned to my office. Commerce was brisk once again, and the coffers were healthy, in part due to an arrangement with Morrigan, no doubt strongly suggested to them by the Queen of Venda. The port of Piadro was granted to Dalbrecht in return for 10% of our profits. It was a beneficial arrangement for both of us. "Another message has arrived from the Keep of Venda." Leah's right-hand man, Caden. No doubt he was asking for another escort, more supplies, more of something. But I knew they needed it, and wouldn't ask if it wasn't necessary. Lending a helping hand to their resettlement benefited all the kingdoms. "Give him whatever he wants." "She wants, you mean?" "Yes, she." I knew the requests ultimately came from Leah, but she called equally on the other kingdoms for help too, and we knew the lesser kingdoms followed the leads of Morrigan and Dalbrecht. We spoke only in messages through our emissaries. It made it easier for both of us. But I heard the reports. Venda was thriving under her reign. I wasn't surprised. One of their farming settlements was being established just beyond our borders. It made some citizens nervous, but I worked to reassure them. Venda was not the Venda it used to be. "The Keep has included something with his message. You might want to look at it." "Whatever it is, take a look." He laid a small package on my desk that was wrapped in cloth and tied up with string, then shoved the message into my hand. "Wagons, grain, escorts." The list went on, the usual requests. But at the end, a note from the Keep. "I found this stuffed behind a manger in Bertie's loft. I think it belongs to you." "Shall I open it?" Sven asked. I stared at the package for a long while. "I am yours, and you are mine, and no kingdom will ever come between us." A very long while. I knew what was in it. Something white, something beautiful, something that had been tossed out long ago. "Jackson." "No," I said. "You can throw it away."
Journey's End. The Promise. The Hope. Gather close, my brothers and sisters. Today is the day 1,000 dreams will be born. We have touched the stars, and the dust of possibility is ours. For once upon a time, 3 women were family as we are now, and they changed the world with the same strength we have within us. We are part of their story, and a greater one that still lies ahead. But the work is never over. Time circles, repeats. And we must not only be ready for the enemy without, but also the enemy within. Though the dragon rests for now, he will wake again and roam the earth, his belly ripe with hunger. Lest we repeat our history, let the stories be passed from father to son, from mother to daughter. For with but one generation, history and truth are lost forever. And so shall it be, sisters of my heart, brothers of my soul, family of my flesh, forevermore. The Song of Jezaliah. Chapter 90.
I tidied up the papers on my desk and looked out the windows of the gallery. A spring shower had left puddles on the veranda. They reflected the towers of a city that didn't look so dark anymore. It was my first time alone in months, and I didn't quite know what to do with the freedom. I had said goodbye to my mother and father this morning. They were returning to Morrigan. Regan had ruled during my father's absence. Bryn was there, too. Mother said he had wrestled with the loss of his leg, but was getting stronger and riding his horse again. This had opened up a new world to him, and now he hoped to come see mine, maybe the following spring. My father was a changed man, not just by the events of these past months, but also by his journey here, seeing a world he hadn't had time for before. I didn't want to become that person who was so caught up in the details of my duty that I didn't live in the world that I governed. I walked the streets of Venda every day. I shared cups of Thanis on street corners. I shopped at the Jehendra, listened to stories at the wash basins, and conferred with the new quarter lords chosen by the clans. I attended their weddings, danced at their celebrations. I fell into the rhythms of a world and people who were coming to life again. In the past months, I had traveled to every province in Venda, meeting with the people and appointing new governors. At least half were women and elders of the clans. From this point forward, they would lose their positions by the will of the people, not by a sword in their back. And that was how I would maintain my position as well. The work and the decisions never ended. With Dalbrek and Morrigan leading by example, the lesser kingdoms agreed to new treaties and contributed to the settlements in the Camlanteau. It didn't come without some resistance, but Morrigan and Dalbrek provided escorts to contingents of Venden settlers. The first crops had been planted, and hope was blooming. The fruit of the work kept me going. I couldn't have done any of it without Caden. He worked tirelessly. All the compassion and tenderness he had gotten from his mother was finally able to shine, but the scars inside him were still there, just like the ones on his back. I saw it when he held Rhys, protective, his reflexes quick, as if no hand would ever scar the skin or soul of this child. I hoped he was right. I knocked on the door of his meeting chamber, and when there was no answer, I went inside. All traces of the Komazar were gone, except for the table with the gash in it that had marked the Komazar's rise to power. Caden's desk was piled as high with papers as mine was. I added more to his pile, a proposed trade agreement with Icelandia. To help the settlements, we had refitted the Komazar's army city for other purposes. The smelteries, the forges, and the cooperages were now busy supplying tools for farming and trade. The testing fields, those we had left to the seasons to erase, the scars and rubble of destruction slowly being swallowed up by wind, rain, grass, and time. The giant golden brezelots that had survived were freed. Now they grazed in herds on distant hilltops, and I saw them in a new way, as the beautiful and majestic creatures they were meant to be. If I ventured too close, if I saw the steam of their hot breaths or heard the pounding of their great hooves, terror would still flash through me, along with the memory of mangled bodies and the smell of burning flesh. Some scars took longer to heal than others, and some scars, I knew, were necessary. Some things you should never forget. "Looking for me?" I turned. Caden stood in the doorway with Rhys on his hip. "That baby's almost a year old," I said. "He's never going to learn to walk if his feet never touch the ground." Caden smiled. "He'll learn soon enough." I told him about the additional paperwork I had left for him, and he took it in stride. He was everything I could ask for in a keep, calm and steady, devoted, loyal. "Where's Pauline?" I asked. His eyes lit up. "Hunting down Eben and Natia." I knew Pauline would prevail and find them. She was determined that everyone would learn how to read and write the language, which she herself was studying. She had begun morning lessons for them and anyone else she could wrangle. I didn't tell Caden I had seen them in the workyard, battling with practice swords. The competition between them was fierce, but there was a playfulness, too, and when I heard them chide and laugh at each other, my heart lifted, seeing that small glimpse of the children in them return. I prayed more would come with time.
I was just saying goodbye to Grizz, he said.
I said my goodbyes last night.
Grizz was leading another group of settlers into the Camlanteau.
Gwyneth would ride with the caravan, too, and then she would continue on to Taravan. She had been helping me here in Venda, but finally had to return home, and to Simone. It didn't matter if she had to love her daughter from a distance. That was where her heart was. She'd promised Bertie she would send news of how the tavern was faring, but with all the caravans that had departed, it wasn't lost on me that she left with the one led by the big, ugly brute, as she still called him. Her wicked banter had frustrated Grizz these past months, but he always seemed to come back for more, and I knew Gwyneth loved watching him struggle to maintain a scowl when a smile lurked in his eyes. They were a strange pair, but I wouldn't be surprised if Grizz took a side trip to Taravan.
Gia!
Rhys squealed and reached out. His swift little fingers yanked a strand of hair from my cap, and he beamed, delighted with his prize. Caden gently pried his fingers free. A dawning rushed over me, and I smiled. Look at us, Caden. You, me, here in Venda, and you with a baby on your hip. He grinned.
Yes, I know. It occurred to me.
Strange how we can glimpse our future, but can never know all of it, I said. I suppose greater stories will have their way. His grin faded.
Are you all right?
He caught me now and then, looking into the distance, wondering, my thoughts thousands of miles from here, remembering. I'm fine, I answered. Just headed to Sanctum Hall. I haven't eaten yet.
I'll be down in a bit, he said.
I passed the royal scholar in the hall. He'd just come from the caverns. Argyris and the other scholars had been returned to Morrigan to face trial, and a rope. No books were burned in the kitchen ovens anymore, no matter how great or small their importance seemed to be.
I'm working on that translation you wanted, he said. It appears to be a book of poetry.
I had given him the small ancient book that Aster had proudly stolen for me from the piles in the cavern.
The first poem is something about hope and feathers. I'll bring it to you later.
I smiled. A poem with wings? How fitting that Aster had taken that one. I still imagined her every day, no longer as the forlorn angel with clipped wings, but as I had seen her when I walked that thin line between life and death. Aster, free, and twirling in a meadow with long flowing hair. Sanctum Hall, like everything in Venda, had changed too. Bertie had seen to that. It no longer stank of spilled ale, and now fresh rushes brightened the floor. The much-abused table still bore the marks of its past, but at least now it gleamed with a daily scrubbing and polish. I crossed the room to a sideboard and fixed a plate from a buffet of hot perch, boiled eggs, flatbreads, and fish caught from the river. At the end of the sideboard there was a platter of bones. My fingers sifted through it, thinking of all the sacrifice. Meunter ijotande. Never forgotten. I slipped another bone onto my tether. I ate alone at the table, looking at its length, the empty chairs, listening to the rare quiet, feeling full in ways I'd never thought possible. But in other ways, some things had taken hold of me that I couldn't quite shake. Things like Taravan. A new beginning that had led to so much more. I took my dishes to the sideboard and grabbed a rag, squeezing it out in the soapy water. A servant walked in, but I turned her away. I'll do it, I told her, and she left. I wiped the crumbs I had left on the table, but then continued to scrub, working my way to the other end. Pauline walked in, her arms full of books, and dropped them on the table. "What are you doing?" she asked. "Just cleaning up a bit." She grinned. "You look more like a kitchen helper than a busy ruler." "There's little difference," I said, and dropped the rag back in the soap pan. I surveyed the floor and reached for the broom propped against the wall. "The floor doesn't need sweeping," she said. "The queen says it does." Her lips pursed in mocking offense. "Then I guess you must sweep." She left. I assumed to get another load of books. The sweet scent of Bertie's stew hung in the air. There were still few luxuries in Venda, but her bottomless pots of stew were one, and as I swept, I saw a jeweled bay, heard the cry of gulls, remembered a gentle knock on my cottage door, and a garland of flowers placed in my hands. A happy squeal broke the silence, and I looked up to see Caden and Pauline at the entrance to the hall, quietly conferring. He handed Rhys to her, but they remained a tight knot, his lips brushing hers with ease. They grew closer every day. Yes, I thought, there are 100 ways to fall in love. I walked over and replaced the broom in its spot near the sideboard. I had no more time for daydreaming. Piles of paper waited for me, and I... "Leah?" Caden called. I turned. He and Pauline walked closer. "Yes?" "There's another emissary here to see you." I rolled my eyes. I was weary of the endless meetings with the lesser kingdoms. It seemed nothing was ever settled once and for all. There were always more assurances I had to offer them. "He or she can wait until..." "It's an emissary from the King of Dalbrek," Pauline said. When I didn't budge, Caden added a reminder. "Dalbrek has been very generous with their supplies." I grunted and conceded. "Show him in." Caden looked over my drab attire. "Aren't you going to change into something more presentable?" I looked down at my work dress, then shot him a disapproving stare, saying more firmly, "Show him in." Pauline began to protest too, but I stopped her. "If this is good enough for the people of Venda, it's good enough for an emissary." They both frowned. I pulled my cap from my head and brushed my hair with my fingers. "There! That better?" They both sighed and left. Minutes later, they returned, Pauline rushing in ahead, standing stiffly near the hearth. Caden stood at the end of the hall, mostly cast in shadows. I could hear the shuffling of a contingent somewhere behind him. Caden stepped forward and announced, "The emissary of Dalbrek, here to speak with the Queen of Venda." I waved my fingers forward impatiently, and Caden stepped aside. The emissary stepped forward. I blinked. I swallowed. He walked across the hall toward me. The only sound was his heavy boots tapping on the stone. He stopped in front of me, his eyes looking into mine, and then slowly he dropped to one knee. "Your Majesty." I couldn't find my voice. My tongue was sand and my throat like a stiff, dried bone. Somehow I made my fingertips move, and I motioned for him to stand. He rose to his feet, and I swallowed again, finally conjuring some moisture to my tongue. I surveyed his rumpled clothes, dusty from a long journey. "You look more like a farmer than a grand emissary of Dalbrek," I said. His eyes gleamed. "And you look more like a tavern maid than the Queen of Venda." He stepped closer. "And what brings you so far?" I asked. "I brought you something." This time it was he who motioned with his hand. There was more shuffling in the dark hall behind him. Then Orin and Tavish walked in with wide grins plastered across their faces. Each of them held a crate filled with melons.
I grew them myself, Rafe said. Mostly. My mind tumbled. Melons? You are a man of many talents, King Jackson. Creases deepened around his eyes. And you, Queen Jezalia, are a woman of surprising strengths. I didn't move. I wasn't sure I was breathing. He reached up and caressed my cheek. I know hundreds of miles separate us. I know you have your endless duties here, and I have mine in Dalbrek. But we've done the impossible, Leah. If we can find a way to end centuries of animosity between the kingdoms, surely we can find a way for us. He bent over, and his lips met mine, gentle, tender, and I trembled against their touch. I tasted the wind, sweet melons, a thousand dreams, and hope. We parted and looked at each other, a better ending at our fingertips. A way for us. Impossible. But that hadn't stopped us before. And I reached up and brought his mouth back to mine.
The End.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Beauty of Darkness, The Remnant Chronicles, Book 3, by Mary E. Pearson. Leah was read by Emily Rankin. Rafe was read by Ryan Gazelle. Caden was read by Kirby Hayborn. Pauline was read by Kim My Guest. Additional narration by Anne-Marie Lee. This program was directed by Bruce Mann. Executive producer, Kelly Gilday. Text copyright, 2016, by Mary E. Pearson. Production copyright, 2016, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.